We often hear people say the sky is the limit, but some choose to chase their dreams far beyond that. One of them is NASA's aerospace engineer, Diana Trujillo. At 41, Trujillo is a lead engineer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. She is the mission lead for the Mars Curiosity rover, designed to explore the red planet's Gale crater and track any signs of life. The car-sized rover was launched in November 2011 and landed 9 months later. Since then, it has driven more than 20 kilometers on the Martian surface. Not a lot, you might think, in more than 8 years, but its top speed is just 0.14 kilometers an hour. Trujillo is part of the Perseverance project, a rover designed to explore another crater on Mars, the Jezero. It was launched in July last year, and it is not scheduled to land until February the 18th. While NASA's Perseverance project is on the way, on this episode of Talk to Al Jazeera, we explore Trujillo's very own story of determination. Born in Colombia, she grew up in her native Cali in the 80s, in the years when Colombia's history was stained by bloodshed, violence, and crime. At just 17, Diana packed her bags and, without speaking any English and with only $300 in her pocket, migrated to the United States. There, she worked as a housekeeper to pay for her education and achieve her American dream. But how does a girl from Cali become a leading engineer at NASA? And how has her journey as an immigrant influenced her work? We find out more as NASA's aerospace engineer, Diana Trujillo, talks to Al Jazeera. NASA aerospace engineer, Diana Trujillo, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Diana, what's the goal that you're aiming for once the Perseverance rover lands on Mars?
Oh, my goodness. We're starting with hard questions right at the get-go. Well, I don't know. To be honest, I have several things in mind. I think that your question is probably what's my personal goal. And my personal goal after we land and we do all the checkouts and we find, hopefully, that there was life on another planet at some point, that I feel like I'm going to have to just like drop the mic and then just walk out of my office and just be done with that and feel like I need to go for the next step of my life. There's several things in my life that I've been thinking about. I'm not 100% sure yet. One of them is, would I like to actually pursue the dream of becoming an astronaut at some point? That's one option. But sometimes I also, think about probably being a doctor in the future and trying to return back to the community. And so, I don't know, to be honest, I feel like my path has always been dictated by something else bigger than myself. So I'm looking forward to whatever comes next.
All right, let me take that a step further. Let's say that you do become an astronaut in the future and that there is a crewed mission to Mars. Would you want to be on that mission?
Absolutely, no doubt.
All right, Diana, let me ask you specifically about the Perseverance, because you're working on the robotic arm. Why is the robotic arm such an important and integral part of this mission?
Well, it's the way that we explore, right? So the way that we actually explore, we need to make sure that we can drive the vehicle in many areas so that the scientists have all the options that they want to understand on the terrain. But then the robotic arm comes in, and that's really... that's really like that connection with the ground, right? And I see it more as if you were a geologist or if you were a scientist, or imagine yourself just going to the park and finding a rock. I have two kids and I've seen them do that. And your immediate reaction is to get down closer and pull it up with your hand and put it closer to your eyes, right? To see it. And so the robotic arm in my mind is really that human connection that mimics what I just described. But then when it gets to the engineering part of it, as you are touching the ground with the robotic arm, 7-foot arm with a ginormous turret, there is instruments on that turret. So imagine as if it was your hand with your fingers. Some of those instruments, one of them Pixel and the other one Sherlock, which is split into Sherlock and Watson, have the ability to take images and make a map of the biosignature that we're going to see on the ground so that we can actually understand what are the areas where there will be highest possibility for finding any signature of life in the past. So to me, the robotic arm is very dear to my heart because it's really it serves those two purposes. It is my hand. I can see it on the cameras. I can see it approaching, and it gives you that idea that is your own hand. And then at the same time, it's carrying these two instruments that will help us find the critical question.
So when it comes to the robotic arm, when it comes to the instruments like Pixel and Sherlock, you're going to be collecting samples on Mars, you're going to be analyzing those samples on Mars, but then also there is a plan to be collecting samples and storing them on Mars, and then at some point in the future trying to get those samples back to Earth. That's not something that's been attempted before, right?
That's correct. So yeah, so you did a very good description of what the intent here is. So the intent is that we land this SUV size, a laser eye nuclear power robot with the most complex mechanical system we have ever flown, which is the caching sample system. And the intent that we're going to do here is that as we're trying to drive and find on a Jezero crater if there was any signature of life, with the robotic arm, we take the map that I explained. And in addition to that, the robotic arm itself has a drill, which will then collect the sample, put it on a tube, just like if you were thinking about when you go get your blood test done, like a tube like that. So put it on a tube and then put it inside the belly of the rover. Once it goes inside the belly of the rover, it goes into the caching system, which is a place where there's 49 other tubes, empty or not, in where it will process that sample. It will push the sample, will take an image, it will close the sample, and then we will drive to a specific location where we will drop the sample in there. Once we actually drop the sample, the intent is that the next mission, the mission that comes after Perseverance, the Mars sample return mission, will be the mission that will go to land on Mars, have a rover that goes find the sample that I just described that Perseverance identify, pick it up, and then launch it back to Earth with the expectation that that will be the first sample that we will ever return from another planet. So Perseverance is doing the first step of that.
Deanna, NASA made the Perseverance mission a priority when the COVID-19 pandemic struck. They established special work protocols so that the launch deadline could be met. Were you worried that it might not happen, that it might be delayed?
To be honest, it didn't occur to me that it was going to get delayed. We were already on our way. I think that to answer your question very specifically, my team was actually in LA when we were going to fly to Florida to do the penultimate checkout for the arm. We were going to fly on Friday, and the COVID-19 protocols and all the issues that happened where we locked down was on Thursday. So for my team, it was quite hard because we needed to respond immediately, not only to go home, but go home and tomorrow morning we're starting operations remotely for the first time. Nobody has done it like this before, so we have to figure it out. The moment where I saw my team the next morning after all of that happened, walk in and run a flawless shift, it was when I realized we're going to pull it off. There's no way we're going to be able to do it. And then NASA did more protocols to ensure that all the people on other teams were also safe. So, yeah, I have no doubt we were going to make it.
Deanna, you have such an inspiring backstory. I want to talk a little bit about your childhood. I saw a video of a talk you gave in which you described how your mother and your grandmother, how they had essentially nicknamed you Lady Deanna after Princess Diana, thinking that that would give you the inspiration to achieve the goals that they could not, you could achieve those dreams. But you said that you were less inspired by Princess Diana, a princess who had been on Earth, than another princess who had been in space. Could you share that story?
Of course. I think that what you're referring really is Princess Leia here. And then much later on, Rey. But I think that...
The Star Wars princesses.
Exactly. I feel like, yeah, absolutely. My family, my mom called me, and my actual name is Lady Diana. So the expectation was that they were giving me the best that they could, even if it was through the name, and demonstrating with the expectations that maybe with the hopes that they couldn't achieve what they wanted to do, but they were hoping that I could. My great-grandma didn't go to school. My grandma just went up to fifth grade. My mom went into university, but then dropped off to help my dad. And I think that they all felt like somebody else needs to do this. And but gradually in between them, they had pushed each other higher, but recognized that they hadn't gotten to where they needed to be. So I think that they all just try to put that on me, not as a, it's your turn, but more like, let us help you with what we can.
Is it true that when you were growing up in Cali, Colombia, that because it was so violent that you would look up into the night sky and look at the stars, and that was a safe space for you? And is that how you first got interested in space exploration?
It is true that, you know, violence was really hard or really too much, I would say, when I was in Colombia. Going out was just an anxiety on itself, right? And so all of that made you just kind of internalize everything, or maybe look for a place to feel like you belonged without being scared. And so that's when, for me, laying down on the ground, looking at the sky, you know, I don't know about you, but I love the smell of grass when it's wet. And so laying on the grass, smelling the grass and looking at the sky and thinking this got to get better, and seeing that the sky works, right? It's insane how much peace it brings if you really look at it, and nothing is like colliding with each other. Nothing seems to be fighting. Everything just works great. And each one of those stars is just a world in its own, plus it's just magical by itself. And so I think that was what inspired me to ask the question of, like, how does this all work?
Deanna, you left Colombia when you were 17. You went to Miami. You only had $300 in your pocket. You worked as a maid to get yourself through school. How did you go from that to becoming part of the NASA program?
To be honest, I don't know. I will say two things. One, I know what I did, which is what I'm going to answer. Now, the question really that is underlines all of this is, how in the world did all of those things line up in a way that I can actually make it? I don't know the answer. I think that I'm a person that believes in God. So to me, this is where God walks in and said, you're doing everything. I'm doing the rest. And so I'm going to focus on what I am doing or what I did, which is, yeah, I just really honestly just worked super hard. I just worked hard. I didn't actually like think about what other people were doing that I wasn't doing, or compare myself with them, or try to like, it's my turn or anything like that. To me, it was just the only thing I can do is to do my best, focus on the thing that I have, make sure that what I have in my hands, I can, you know, water it and increase it and grow it out of my own abilities, and not grow it out of fear because somebody else is going to intercept me. So I kind of tune out, I should say, everybody else from the expectations. Because, you know, if you tell somebody, hey, I'm a maid, I would like to work at NASA, it's like, okay, those two things don't go together in many people's head. But what I realized was that what I am is a very resourceful, creative person. And so to me, working as a maid wasn't that I was going to be a maid for the rest of my life. It was that was the resource I had available at that time, and I identified, so I went for it. And the same thing for my next job. And I just saw everything as opportunities coming my way that were available for me to grow. And then recognizing what the goal was and where I wanted to be the whole time.
You were the first immigrant Latina woman in the NASA Academy program. What was that experience like for you?
It was interesting. It was interesting because I knew English. I had been in college for 2 years, but I didn't know English well enough to feel like I could communicate at the level that I wanted to, at the place that I was, with the people that I was with. And so it was a very hard experience for me, not because the situation was hard. It was a very hard experience for me because I needed to overcome myself. I needed to, at that point, realize it doesn't matter if you're not at the level you want to be. Just accept the fact that you're here. And again, make the best out of what you have right now.
Deanna, your work is so unique. You have to come up with ideas that nobody else has come up with. I'm curious how your experience as an immigrant influences your work.
Oh, absolutely. It influences it a lot. I think that maybe this is probably the primary thing that the direct connection in between me being from Colombia, my culture, my nationality, the way that I came in, having been an immigrant, working from the bottom, total direct connection here. It's direct connection because of what I mentioned earlier, is all about always seeing the possibilities. So coming up with different solutions that are not evident is something that I feel like immigrants have innate on themselves. And it's even more predominant, I feel like, when you're an immigrant from a third world country. You know, everybody's expected to have a laptop, but we're not. Or everybody's expected to, you know, go to Home Depot and buy everything that they need to create their project, but we just have paper and tape, if tape at all, right? And so I think that that makes you have to think about different ways of making it happen. And so that's one thing. The other thing I also feel like in my culture specifically, we walk like a group, right? And so it's all about, you know, my mom, my grandma, my aunt, my cousins. And so it's this extended family where you inevitably have learned that you're working in a huge team with a bunch of people that have different opinions. And I take that to my work now. And it's exactly like that, right? You have a lot of people with different opinions. And now it's up to you to tease out which ones are the opinions that need to be evaluated. I am very grateful that, you know, we have to come up with ideas. Obviously, they're not just my ideas, but is the ideas of the team. And having come from a big family also makes you think about, it doesn't always have to be your idea. It just has to be an idea that works.
Deanna, how difficult is it to be a female aerospace engineer? I would assume that NASA would be a more of a male-dominated environment.
It is, but to be honest, I feel like when Apollo happened, total male dominated. I know there's other areas on the center that are still very male dominated. I think that even if I don't speak about NASA, but we go to the colleges, right, and we look at aerospace engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, there's not enough women on those majors or in the classes, right? And so it is not just NASA, it's the way that we are bringing in women into the pipeline and having the women graduate to go into jobs. So this is where all the stuff are hurting. Now, how is it when you're a woman? You know, to be honest, I feel like my team specifically, and when I say my team, I'm saying the Perseverance team, there's a lot of women in high positions. Like my bosses are actually all women, as you're asking me right now, they're all women. And it's just great to see that. But if you think about like what's on the top, all men. Is that a problem? I think that because there are so many women at the level that I am and my direct bosses and my boss's bosses, I see the possibilities of not seeing distinction anymore, but instead focusing on the content and the performance. Can this person do the job?
How important is it for you to serve as a role model for young people from Latin America who want to pursue a career in science and engineering?
Oh, for me, it's extremely important to do that. I think that to me, the reason why it's so important is not so much because I'm a woman in the room. It is important to me because I want to make sure that whatever I represent, which are different things, I represent it in a way that other people now start thinking that those are options for them. And so for me, it's very important that people see me doing this job. It's because I feel like we have so much capacity to do so many things. Creativity and resourcefulness is incredibly important. And so if we want to create new technologies, if we want to do new things that nobody else has thought about it before, it requires those two things, creativity and resourcefulness. And to be honest, perseverance as well, like don't give up. And those three things to me are very much to the core of an immigrant or to a core of a person from a third world country, right? I'm not saying that other people don't have it, but I'm just saying that that's something that is just everyday life. You exercise that aspect of your life so often that it makes you and your mind a perfect candidate to come up with new and creative ways of doing things.
Deanna, recently a former Senate candidate named Lauren Witzke from Delaware tweeted, most third world migrants cannot assimilate into civil societies. Prove me wrong. That's what the tweet said. You're obviously one of the millions who have proved her wrong. But what do you say to statements like that?
I don't have to say anything, to be honest. I understand that maybe that person doesn't grasp the concept of what is being explained or said or understood the depth of their words. I don't know. It is not for me to pass judgment on that person. But when somebody says that, to be honest, I'm not worried about it because I don't live my life by comments like that, right? It's fine. You think that that's the way that it's going to go, but this is how I conduct my life. And it's clear to me that that person and I don't get to interact in the way that I wish we could. But that doesn't stop me from being myself. I'm not going to stop them from understanding what the reality is if they peek on the other side. That is a choice that they need to make, but their choices don't interfere with my choices. Now, the problem will be if I want to do something and then the other person does not allow me to or block me from doing what I need to do because of that belief. That, thankfully, that hasn't happened to me. And thankfully, the track that I am in is all based on performance. Now, I wouldn't lie that there's no instances, not now in my life, but in the past where people look down on you or people say, well, you can't say that, right? You must not understand. Or people that really don't know who I am or haven't worked with me and misjudge me because I misspell a word or say something that is not accurate, that is not correct or grammatically correct. Let me say it that way. I don't care about that either because I know that in 5 minutes when the time comes and it's my turn to talk, I know my stuff. And nobody's going to take that away from me either. So I do my job and I conduct my life with excellence, regardless about what everybody else says. And when my turn comes, you're going to see.
You work with organizations like the Brooke Owens Fellowship. These are groups that are designed to help young women who want to explore the sky and stars. In your experience with the women whom you have helped, what are the biggest challenges that women and minorities face at this moment? And are things getting any better for them?
Yeah, so I think the biggest challenge that we're facing with women in general, and in women in minority even more, and is related also, is I will say imposter syndrome, not knowing your own worth and thinking that what you're giving is not sufficient, that you need to give more, that there's some higher expectation. And then that combined with somebody else saying a comment like the previous comment that you mentioned to me, it just rattles anybody's spirit and anybody's perspective on themselves. That is, I feel like, the combination of what or the issue that we need to work on to help women that are coming in, even through the Brooke Owens Fellowship or not, recognize the value that they can bring to the table. And that that value is actually determined by themselves and not by somebody else. It is clear that the value needs to match the need for the job. But besides that, it is now them. So that's one aspect. Now, are things getting better for them? I think that they're not getting better at the rate that it should be. And I think with the situation with COVID-19, things get even harder because imagine you trying to interview for a job and you don't get to meet the person, but you get to work on your first job and interview for your first job ever via Skype or via Zoom. That makes things way harder. So I'm a little bit worried about that. That we were making a good change by with more women coming in into the workforce. But we need to evaluate how COVID is going to hurt us on that progress.
Deanna, as a role model, what is your message to those little girls in developing countries who look up to you and who want to do what you are doing?
I think that for me, for those little girls in developing countries or even on non-developing countries, right, I feel like the message to me is the same, which is find what you like. Find what you like. And find what you like not because somebody told you what it should be or what they see you doing. Take some time at some point. I don't know if it's on your day or on your week or however you do it, but shut everything down and just sit down in your backyard or whatever, and think about what you want to do in the perspective of what makes you happy, what brings you joy. And when you identify what makes you happy and what brings you joy, then try to trace that to a role model that is doing something similar so you can look at their trajectory and decide, okay, if they did it that way, I want to do it this way, with that, not that, with this. And then find a way of channelizing what you love with a plan that potentially you can follow, so that can put you on the track where you can discover who you can become. Don't let anybody else tell you what you need to do.
NASA aerospace engineer Diana Trujillo, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.